Our doctor is in, and so are the doctors of Capital Health. Welcome to the all-new Health 411. Every Sunday morning at 10, Dr. Jonathan Karp, along with our respected panel of guests from Capital Health, take you on an important medical journey to help you navigate your health and the healthcare system to reach your destination, good health. Health 411 is underwritten by Capital Health, Minds Advancing Medicine. Capital Health is the region's leader in providing progressive quality patient care with exceptional physicians, nurses, and staff, as well as advanced technology.
107.7 The Bronc and 107.7TheBronc.com. Proudly nominated for five consecutive National Association of Broadcasters Marconi Awards for Best College Radio Station, as well as a winner of the 2023 IBS College Media Award for universities under 10,000 students. We are broadcasting from the Bronx All Digital Studios on the campus of Rider University. Welcome to Health 411. I am your host, Professor Jonathan Karp. Health 411 is presented by Capital Health. In Health 411, we discuss a variety of issues affecting health and wellness, public health, healthcare policy, and the science of health and healthcare. Our goal is to expand your knowledge and perspective to give you some things to think about. Today, our student producer, Josh Brewer, and I are going to have a conversation about the immunological consequences of a feast diet. And we hope we welcome you to listen in our conversation as we talk about this. Welcome, Josh.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. Let's just start off in saying sort of the consequences of long-term high-fat, high-calorie diets are sort of well-known. Mm-hmm. And there's a large literature, there are entire industries about trying to create long-term changes in what people eat, humans and animals eat. And we know that if you eat a feast diet, a high-fat, high-calorie diet for long periods of time, there are a whole bunch of health consequences, mm-hmm. Leading to things. It could be diabetes or metabolic syndrome, mm-hmm. a whole bunch of immune consequences, a whole bunch of things going
Heart
on.
Heart disease. Cool.
Heart disease, right. Well, you know, a whole bunch of things that have both immediate health consequences that cost the healthcare system a lot and all that sort of stuff. What's sort of interesting and what spurred me to want to have this conversation with you is I found a relatively recent paper in Nature Immunology, one of the Nature journals, mm-hmm. That was about the title of the article is Short-Term Dietary Changes Can Result in Mucosal and Systemic Immune Depression. Mm-hmm. And what got me interested in that is instead of just looking at the effects of long-term diets on health, in this case, immune system function, people are starting to investigate is what happens if you would engage in what they call in the paper a feast diet. Mm-hmm. What are the consequences if you have sort of a weekend binge mm-hmm. on a diet? Or it's
big Thanksgiving feast.
Big yeah. Thanksgiving, right. If you have a Thanksgiving feast for a couple days, if you do the Super Bowl thing where you start eating and drinking on Friday night and you keep going through Sunday, so you have 3 days like that. Are there health, in this case, immunological, are there immunological consequences of that? Are they reversible? Those kinds of questions came to my mind because we know a high-fat, high-carb diet, especially during social activities, has long-term consequences. What are the short-term consequences of these things? And what sparked my interest is this. I mean, I don't follow this line of literature very tightly, but it was the first paper I saw that sort of was looking at that. And the fact that it showed up in one of the Nature journals, Nature Immunology, tells me that the peer review system values the things that were in this paper, mm-hmm. sort of a higher end, and that gave me interest. So I gave it to you and said, let's look at it, let's read it, and let's have a conversation about it. You game?
Yep, sounds good to me.
Okay, so when you got this paper, just tell me, you just got an email from me with this paper attached. What was your immediate response? What thoughts went through your head?
Well, I was interested because I always find the immune system interesting. I find it to be a really confusing but interesting beast as a whole. And, all kinds of different things can affect it, from long-term lifestyle things to different chemical things that happen transiently. And I was interested in a lot of the same things that you just brought up, where it's okay. You hear a lot of long-term depression of the immune system. But I was interested in, those short-term changes and what that could mean for individual people's health.
Okay. Cool. Okay. Not exactly what I thought you were going to say, but that's fine. So what they basically did in this study, and it's what's interesting about it is, let's say 90% of the study is using animals, mice. Mm-hmm. They use some different kinds of mice. They're on a C57 Black 6 background. I don't want to turn this into a journal club. Mm-hmm. We're not going to, because there will people listening will completely tune it out. But basically, they fed a mice a diet that they called a feast diet that was 60% fat and had cholesterol, but really, really low in fiber. Mm-hmm. That's the feast, right? And they fed them that for 3 days. Mm-hmm. Then they switched to normal rodent chow. Now, normal rodent chow, most people use normal rodent chow, but it's the stuff that animal scientists have figured out. Now, there's different rodent chows for pregnant animals versus normal animals, but it's a well-balanced diet, mm-hmm. sort of a the rodent mouse sort equivalent of healthy eating. Yeah, optimal growth, no mm-hmm. disease, stuff like that. And then they did that back to another 3 days. And then they switched them back to the feast diet. Mm-hmm. And so they did this three times for a total of 12 days. What they did then, which I found pretty interesting, is they examined gene expression in some cells of the immune system. Mm-hmm. So what that means was, and they did it at different time points, that they collected some of the cells of the immune system, and we'll go over them because there's a subset of cells which are called T helper cells mm-hmm. that they were among the cells that they examined, and they looked for changes in gene expression in those kinds of cells. Give an overview is they were able to trace to a certain subset of cells in the immune system. They found changes in gene expression in those kinds of cells. And then overall, what they were able to do is they made some hypotheses that we'll review later, is they actually infected the mice with salmonella. Mm-hmm. Which you might have infected yourself inadvertently with one of the strains of that you were telling me before we started recording. And then they looked at, so they challenged the mice with a kind of antigen, with a bacteria that these cells are thought to play a role in infecting. And then they wanted to see what were the consequences of this. But they also, in this paper, which I found pretty interesting, is they went to look at to see, are these effects reversible, mm-hmm. right? If we can see, and I'm giving away the punchline, is they saw effects in a couple of days, mm-hmm. right? The paper wouldn't have got published if there were no practical consequences of this in terms of the salmonella infection mm-hmm. that they gave the animals. One of the reasons it got into one of the Nature journals is not only did they show these effects, they show these changes in immunity, that these changes in immunity are related to a practical outcome in terms of antigen load, but they were also able to reverse these changes when they switched diet in just a couple days. Mm-hmm. And further on, which was sort of interesting about this particular paper, did you read it all the way to the end? What was the last part of the paper? They did some human stuff.
Yeah, they.
Yeah, so they did some a short experiment to look at the sort of the consumption of this this feast diet, the fiber poor diets, in humans mm-hmm. to see if the predictions that came from the mice mm-hmm. Held out in people. And that's what I found sort of an overview of what we're going to talk about today. Mm-hmm. So today we're going to talk about sort of the science of sort of this feast diet and some of the immunological and potentially disease causing. And we're going to put in the back of your head is could there be sort of an evolutionary mechanism of why this sort of response to what you're eating in terms of the immune system might be important. So I'll put that in your head and we'll come to that towards the end of what we talk about today. But what we're going to do right now is we're going to take a break on Health 411 for some underwriting announcements. You are listening to 107.7 The Bronx and 107.7thebronx.com.
There's no appointment needed for this doctor's visit. Now back to the all-new Health 411, underwritten by Capital Health, Minds Advancing Medicine. There's no appointment needed for this doctor's visit. Now back to the all-new Health 411, underwritten by Capital Health, Minds Advancing Medicine.
107.7 The Bronc and 107.7TheBronc.com. Welcome back to Health 411. We are recording from the Digital Bronc Studios in Lawrenceville, New Jersey, on the Rider University campus. And Josh and I are continuing our conversation about feast diets. And feast diets are, you know, high-fat diets with very, very low fiber amounts. And we were spurred to this conversation by looking at a paper that examined sort of feast diets in mice. And what they did in this particular paper is they fed animals, mice, a feast diet of 60% fat and cholesterol, but low in fiber for 3 days. And then they switched to a healthy diet for another 3 days, alternating another 3 days to the feast diet. And during different times, they collected cells from the animals. And they were particularly interested in cells of the immune system. Mm. And we don't have to go full nerd here and talk about immunology, but there's a family of cells of the immune system that are called CD4 positive cells. Mm-hmm. And CD4 positive cells are a kind of T cell. The chemicals of the immune system that these CD4 positive cells are exposed to, called cytokines, what cytokines they're exposed to will differentiate the subset of these CD4 cells into TH1, TH2, or TH17, T helper cell, TH kinds of things. And these are some of the different arms of the immune system. Mm-hmm. This process is sort of stimulated by antigen-presenting cells. Mm-hmm. Now, antigen-presenting cells are things like macrophages that gobble up antigens. Mm-hmm. And antigens are what?
Things on the cell surface that, or really on any surface that just tells your body whether it's you or not, typically.
Yes. So if a foreign something, a virus, bacteria, mm-hmm. a foreign something gets into your body, there are cells that recognize it that will gobble it up, mm-hmm. and present pieces of whatever it gobbled up on its cell surface. So it's antigen-presenting cells. Mm-hmm. They are going to stimulate these CD4-positive cells, and then these CD4-positive cells, based on the type
they
of—
They turn on the B cells and all those guys.
Yeah, yeah. That's a different arm of the immune system.
Gotcha.
I'm talking about the T cell. Mm-hmm. So you have B cells and T cells, mm-hmm. That sort of have different roles in the immune system, mm-hmm. but the T helper cells, which is a subset of the T cells, mm-hmm. right, differentiate into TH1, TH2, and TH17 sort of things. The idea being, just you're looking at me funny, so I'll give you back. The TH1 cells are designed to be upregulated if you have intracellular pathogens. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like a cell mediated kind of immunity to get like viruses and stuff. The TH2 arm is designed to get like extracellular pathogens, mm-hmm. that are more involved, like allergies, things that are floating around between the cells. And then the T helper cell 17, like when I was a postdoc, there was only TH1 and TH2. And mm-hmm. I still feel funny now, but I created entire postdoctoral projects and research based on the idea of like a fulcrum balance, a seesaw balance between TH1 and TH2 cells, mm-hmm. Which I thought was a really cool hypothesis back then. I wasn't the only one who came up with it. A lot of people were doing that. But then, you know, about 15, 20 years ago, these TH17 arm came. And what they are is it's another branch that is sort of designed to protect against extracellular pathogens that has been discovered to be really, really important in autoimmunity. Mm-hmm. Some autoimmune diseases seem to be mediated by changes in the TH17. Now, what does the 17 correspond to? They're called T helper cells, 17 cells, because they secrete a cytokine, interleukin. The interleukins are examples of cytokine, interleukin 17. Mm-hmm. And IL-17 is designed to sort of stimulate downstream protection against extracellular pathogens and protections against autoimmunity. Despite the fact that the cell-mediated branch for TH1 and the humoral branch for TH2 being discovered first, I have no proof of this, but my guess is the TH17 arm is probably evolutionarily a little bit older.
Gotcha.
Because some of that immunity has to do with mucosal immunity, mm-hmm. which is my guess would be those are some of the barriers that are going to keep things from getting into the body, especially mm-hmm. like from the GI tract and stuff like that, which gotcha. Is probably evolutionarily very old. And if you remember, the title of the paper was short-term dietary changes can result in mucosal and systemic immune depression. So they're recognizing that or what they found out, but there's changes in mucosal immunity as a result of that. Now, didn't mean to go back too far and go too immune, but what did they find? So they fed mice this, I love the term feast diet, mm-hmm. for 3 days up to 12 days, cycling it on and off. And what they found was the changes in mucosal immunity were T cell mediated, and they primarily affected these T helper cells that are known to secrete the cytokine IL-17. What's interesting is when they did a gene expression analysis, because scientists now can isolate these different subsets of T cells and see what these cells are capable of making, mm-hmm. right? So there's sort of like a challenge. You can take the cells out of a mouse or out of a person, and you can see what genes are turned on or what genes are turned off.
Sure.
Sort of a gene expression analysis. Mm-hmm. And that's what a lot of the data in here is all about.
And then I'm sure they can look at... what the mice can't protect against now as well.
That's when I did the overview. That's what comes later.
Yeah.
First, they're figuring out, did this diet change mm-hmm. what the immune system is capable of doing?
Gotcha.
So it started by taking the cells out, and they isolated some of these T helper cell 17 cells, and then they looked at interleukin 17 related genes mm-hmm. inside these cells. Are these cells making more of IL-17? Is IL-17 being suppressed, or is there no change relative to the mice being fed a healthy diet that mm-hmm. weren't being cycled on and off these things? And what was very interesting is the feast mice, their T helper cell 17s, the genes that are associated with the production of interleukin 17 were downregulated, mm-hmm. which means the cell's capability, right, was to make less of this cytokine that's important in promoting sort of anti-autoimmunity and anti-extracellular pathogen sort of thing.
Gotcha.
It was downregulated. On top of that, and this is the thing whenever you read the immunology literature, it's important to look at not just what the cells are there can do. A lot of the immunology has to do with how many of them are there.
Sure.
Right? And so not only were the T helper cell 17 making less IL-17, but the numbers of these Th17 cells also went down with the feast diet.
Gotcha.
Compared to animals that were given sort of the healthy diet. And that's sort of interesting because you have a decrease in number mm-hmm. and you have a decrease in of the cells that are still there, a decrease in their capabilities,
mm-hmm.
right? And if you saw those data, right? The scientists who created this paper probably did the same thing, asked the same question that you just asked, mm-hmm. right? Are there functional consequences of this?
Sure.
And this is actually a real thing in science, and you see this all the time in the literature, people reporting, you know, you do this manipulation and you get this effect on some cell, or mm-hmm. you take a cell out of a body and you challenge it and you have these capabilities in the test tube all this other stuff. Just because you change a number or you change the function of the cell when it's outside the body,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't mean it has like health consequences.
Sure.
Right? Your body, the number of cells and things are going up and down all mm-hmm. over the place all the time, and most of the stuff has no health consequences.
It's pretty good at adapting too.
Well, yeah. So what there is there's a sort of a functional zone of health.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of like the idea of like an allosteric load.
Sure.
You know, hormones, cell numbers, cytokines, a whole bunch of things are going to go up, go down within a range mm-hmm. that's sort of normal. And as long as you're in that range, it's normal. If you go too high or too low, you know, you can even think of body temperature a little bit that way. Mm-hmm. You know, your body temperature is not 37 degrees or mm-hmm. 98.6. It's actually rarely ever 98.6 or mm-hmm. 37. Sometimes a little bit low, but it's all mm-hmm. with the normal healthy range. If it goes up too high or goes down too low, you start to have lots of problems. And this is what happened with these T helper cells. So you have downregulated IL-17 gene expression in the feast mice compared to healthy eating mice, and you have a decrease in cell number. The scientists are just like you. They're going to say, are there any real life consequences to this? So we'll come back and we'll talk about that after some underwriting announcements. We'll be right back on Health 411. You're listening to 107.7 The Bronx and 107.7TheBronx.com.
There's no appointment needed for this doctor's visit. Now back to the all new Health 411, underwritten by Capital Health, Minds Advancing Medicine. There's no appointment needed for this doctor's visit. Now back to the all-new Health 411, underwritten by Capital Health, Minds Advancing Medicine.
107.7TheBronx.com and 107.7TheBronx. Welcome back to Health 411. Josh and I are continuing our conversation about the immune costs of feasting. So far, we're talking about an experiment that was done in mice. And in the last segment, I talked gave a very brief overview of T helper cell 17, TH17 cells, and the cytokine IL-17 that they make. These cells play a role in host defense against extracellular pathogens, especially at the mucosal and epithelial barriers, like in the gut, right? And they are soon to be mediated is when things go wrong and auto sort of pathogenesis of different kinds of autoimmune disorders like EAE and things like that that they've been implicated in animal models. Big long story short is that if you put mice on a feast diet, sort of that was designed to sort of mimic human social consumptions of fair times, the number of these cells and the ability of the cells that are left to produce this important cytokine is diminished. It goes down. And the scientists were very, very bright, and they know the idea just because you have these changes in cell number and the cell ability, right, the gene regulation, at least theoretically when you take the cells out to respond, it doesn't mean that that has any health consequences for the critter. Mm-hmm. In this case, it's mice or it could be people. So what they did was they infected mice with salmonella. Mm-hmm. Have you heard of salmonella before?
Yeah, absolutely. It can take over your enteric system, like your intestines, right? And give you a pretty bad stomach bug.
Yeah. So salmonella, and there's different strains of it, and it doesn't, for our purposes, it doesn't matter the substrain. But they picked a strain. Salmonella is one of the things you have to worry about, like if you buy canned food, right? Why should you always make sure that there's not like a bubble in a can when you buy it in the supermarket?
Because aerobic bacteria can...
Yeah, because if bacteria are in the canned food that you are purchasing, eventually the active bacteria are going to produce things like gas as a waste product, and the can is going to pop or bubble or something like that. So salmonella is one of the things that causes food poisoning.
I think Clostridium botulinum was a bad one for a while, too, with the
It could be. It could be. Salmonella is a classic one. And there are several of them. It's a bacteria. We need to say it's a bacteria that grows. And what they did is they infected these animals with a bacteria that's known to attack its hosts in the gut, sort of the mucosal lining where there's a lot of epithelial cells. Now, that's important because these are cells that sort of help create a barrier to what gets in to the body. And if something's in your GI tract, it's just in the tube. But immunologically, the stuff that's inside the tube is in your body, but immunologically, it's outside your body. And then good things get in, like nutrients, can get through the tube to get into from the lumen of the tube through these cells in. But the immune system and other kinds of barriers help keep stuff out. But what they did was they infected mice with salmonella of a certain strain that is well studied, and they compared the responses of intact mice, right, healthy diet mice to feast mice. And what they found was that the feast mice showed more salmonella in their gut, so the immune systems were less able to eliminate the salmonella after only 3 days of the feast diet. What's interesting is salmonella is known to be eradicated by the body using the T helper cell 17 arm of the immune system. which is actually pretty cool. So this suggested that there was something big going on related to the T helper cells in IL-17 related to the feast diet. The feast diet probably does a lot of other things too. That, you know, the example is like if you're in the complete dark, Josh, mm-hmm. and you turn on a flashlight, you can only see what the flashlight is shining on.
Yeah.
You can't see the stuff that the flashlight isn't shining on. Mm-hmm. These people were studying the T helper cell 17s. So how do they know that the consequences of the feast diet are related to what they're measuring? Well, they did a cool experiment. They took some mice on the same genetic background, but they are IL-17 knockout mice. Mm-hmm. Have you heard that expression before?
Yeah, the knockout mice, it had something to do with, was it the gut microbiome?
Yeah, but if somebody says to you, oh, we're going to do an experiment with knockout mice. In this case, it's IL-17, which you've already said is a cytokine. It's a chemical of the immune system. They're knockout mice. What does the word knockout mean in this context?
I'm not sure, to be honest with you.
So what the word knockout means in this context, through the tools of genetic engineering, you can create organisms, in this case mice, that are incapable of making certain kinds of things. So you're knocking out the genes that are responsible for this case, this IL-17 protein.
Gotcha.
And so if you really want, so if you did this behavioral manipulation relative to diet, you suspect, because you measured these cells, you have mm-hmm. fewer cells and they can't make IL-17 as much as the ones that are left. If you really think it's IL-17, why don't we get some animals, we'll breed them up, animals that can't make any IL-17.
See if they get the same sickness and
everything. Boom, yeah. You're listening to me. I'm mm-hmm. impressed. A lot of students don't listen to their professors. But well done, Josh. You nailed it. So they use some IL-17 knockout mice. It ends up being there are some different versions of IL-17. So people who are, you know, immunology nerds out there. Excuse me. These mice were IL-17A and IL-17F knockouts. And then they did the same experiment where they infected them with salmonella. Mm-hmm. And then what was really, really cool is the knockouts had more bacteria in their gut. They mm-hmm. were losing weight, right? Just like the feast mice.
Sure.
Right? So they had a higher bacterial load, that their immune system was not clearing it, and the mice were essentially sicker mm-hmm. mice. Like, you know, it's like the cartoon character. The explosions are going off. We knocked out a specific protein that these animals are capable of making, mm-hmm. and we got
a similar
effect. And what does that tell you?
Probably their hypothesis was pretty valid.
Yeah, the system that we knocked out was probably on target mm-hmm. of what we were studying here. And what was interesting about this is there was a component of the research that with a lot of things sort of did next. So we've identified a cell type that's affected by the diet. We have animals, we knock out their ability to make the same thing we were measuring. Mm-hmm. Logically, what are some of the things you would think about to do next if these were your data?
Try to give a human a feast diet?
We gave that away, that's coming later. We're still in an animal model. A question that they asked logically was this effect of the feast diet? Remember, this is a couple days of the feast diet. Is it reversible?
Oh, okay.
Or if I put animals on this feast diet, have I changed something? Have I done some sort of epigenetic change that's now permanent mm-hmm. for the way this animal is going to respond later on?
Sure.
That like a logical kind of question?
Makes sense. Let me see if they can bounce back.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's exactly what they did in this animal model, because you can do things in the animal model that you wouldn't be ethical.
Can't make humans sick on a virus like that.
They do it occasionally, but you're not really, there's ethical issues related to it. Mm-hmm. But what was interesting is then they took these animals who had been given the feast diet, and they supplemented mm-hmm. some of the things that were lacking, short chain fatty acids, like butyrate and acetate and fiber and things like that. Mm-hmm. And they fed that to the animals that had the feast diet. And what was pretty interesting about that is what happened.
Looks like they bounced back pretty much, right, with the fiber?
When you sort of supplemented the feast diet with mm-hmm. the things that were missing, in this case, a lot of the fiber and the short-chain fatty acids, the number of Th17 cells went back up, and the ability of these cells to secrete the cytokine IL-17 went back up. So it basically showed that these short-term, these immune changes from short-term exposure to a feast diet were reversible. Mm-hmm. And I think that's pretty cool. And we'll come back and we'll talk more about that after some underwriting announcements. We'll be right back with Health 411. You're listening to 107.7 The Bronx and 107.7thebronx.com.
There's no appointment needed for this doctor's visit. Now back to the all-new Health 411, underwritten by Capital Health, Minds Advancing Medicine. There's no appointment needed for this doctor's visit. Now back to the all-new Health 411, underwritten by Capital Health, Minds Advancing Medicine.
107.7 The Bronx and 107.7thebronx.com. Welcome back to Health 411. I'm Professor Jonathan Karp, and although Josh is doing more listening than talking, I'm trying to have a conversation with him about this paper that I gave him that was about the effects of feast diets on the mucosal arm of the immune system. And we were reviewing some of the effects in mice, and Josh really, really wants me to talk about sort of what they did at the end of this paper, because what they did is sort of they created sort of a working hypothesis. Mm-hmm. It's a reasonable question to ask is, oh yeah, you give these mice this sort of feast diet and you get these immune changes that has some functional consequences for them. What does it have to do with people? Just because it happens in mice doesn't mean it happens to people in the same way. But what they did here is they performed a human dietary intervention, and they focused on dietary fiber, which seemed to be the lack of which seemed to be a component of sort of the feast diet.
Sure.
And what they did here is they had human volunteers, and they offered them a fiber-rich diet for 5 days, and then they were switched to a fiber-poor diet for an additional 5 days. Mm-hmm. So it's sort of analogous to the feast normal diet they were doing with the mice.
Gotcha.
And what they found was that the fiber deprivation, the switch, you know, changed the composition of their intestinal microbiome in some volunteers. And they looked at some of the things were different. In addition to that, they measured the T helper cells in humans in the peripheral blood from this diet. And they identified the T helper cell 17s that were also making IL-17A and F and some other cytokines in the peripheral blood. And what was sort of interesting, and the reason we're talking about it, is what would you predict happened to these Th17 cells in the humans in their peripheral blood who were on this fiber-restricted diet, the feast diet for 5 days?
I would imagine the same thing as the mice, correct?
Yeah, ka-ching. Yeah, that's exactly what happened. Mm-hmm. They looked at sort of the microbial, you know, you can't infect the humans with salmonella, but when these humans, this is within subject design, when the humans were on their fiber-deprived diet, they did an assay of the microbiome in the gut of the, and there was a lot of stuff going on. To say a relatively high microbiological load of bacteria. Mm-hmm. And then when they put them on the fiber-rich diet, the numbers came back down. And it was correlated with a change in T helper cell 17 number and cytokine production consistent with the mice that they saw, kinds of stuff like that. Sort of cool, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think it'd be safe to say if they could do the salmonella thing, I'm sure it would also have a similar response.
Right,
with the
but
mice.
You have to decide, is it ethical to give humans essentially food poisoning?
But I think it's reasonable that it would have a similar reaction to the mice.
Yeah, well, in this case, the guess moving forward here is the mice seem to be responding to a diet the same way that the humans are responding to the diet, or the humans are responding the same way that the mice do. And so it looks like the short-term dietary interventions can significantly alter host immune responses in both humans and animals, especially at the mucosal immune barrier of the gut. Mm-hmm. And that's actually pretty cool. And like I said, these experiments that we're discussing made it into one of the Nature Immunology journals. And so I'm summarizing a lot of things, and there's a lot of data in it, but I think that's actually pretty cool.
I gotcha. One question I would have, Do you think that it has so much to do with the high fat and the high calories, as much as it just seems like they were restricting fiber? That seems like the main driver to me.
Oh, you're saying it's feasting. Fiber restriction instead of the high fat?
That's what it sounds like to me.
That's a very, very reasonable hypothesis. And fiber is important. One could argue the fiber helps, especially if it's non-digestible fiber, can help just move things through, and a lot of bacteria is cleared out. Absolutely. And that is a reasonable hypothesis.
It sounds like on this feast diet, when they just added in fiber, seemed like everything pretty much went back to normal.
Right, but the idea is what is the fiber doing? The fiber is providing sort of butyrate and acetate, some of these things that are important for these cells of the immune system to do what they need to do. So it's providing their fuel, gotcha, as opposed to just providing bulk clearing out. Mm-hmm. On top of that, remember, they measured the number and the function of arms of the immune system. Mm-hmm. And the working hypothesis, I think, would be is that the feast diet, whether it's the lack of fiber or the fact that other things are there, is reducing your immune system's ability to make these things.
Sure.
When there's an antigen challenge.
Gotcha.
Right? So the capabilities of the system are reduced. Mm-hmm. And the reduction in these capabilities led to animals getting more sick when they were purposely infected with food poisoning.
Sure.
Which was actually sort of cool. And that sort of summarizes the paper. However, right, mm-hmm, I'm going to talk about something that most students don't even look at. Right, and I'm guilty as anybody. I didn't even look at some stuff when I sent the paper to you.
Sure.
Right, and then a couple nights ago when I was rereading it, and it's like, oh, I guess Josh and I are really going to talk about this because you said okay. It's like I actually read some of the methods sections. Mm-hmm. Right, and so I try not to go journal clubby when we do Health 411 because it sort of gets into the weeds a little bit, and we nerd people out talking about these things.
I'm guilty of reading the intro and the conclusion sometimes.
we will break you of that by the time you graduate, Josh. But I actually read the methods in this, and I learned more about the mice, how they were housed, and all these things. And then boom, 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 I'm reading the methods, and buried in there in the methods section under the section called experimental animals, housing conditions, and diets, there's a sentence. There are two sentences that gave me great alarm. The first sentence that gave me great alarm as a scientist that I think I just want to put out there. Male and female mice were interchangeably used.
It was like a pretty reasonable control to...
Well, kaboom, kaboom, kaboom.
Yeah.
Remember, mice are not just test tubes with fur.
Yeah.
I hate to say that, right? And what's interesting is there's a huge literature now looking at a whole bunch of physiological parameters are different between males and females.
Big difference in hormones, for sure.
Well, hormones are part of the contributing factors, but not the only ones. They're the main ones, right? Females have a lot more estrogen and progesterone. These things tend to have effects on the capability of the immune system to work. Testosterone has effects on the immune system to work. Mm-hmm. We don't have time to go into it, but in terms of having a potentially lurking variable or confounding factor, they have a study here looking at male and female mice, and they use them interchangeably. Mm-hmm. It's not like they studied both and said the effects in males and females were the same, so we combined them. They just combined them for all their assos. In a sense, they ignored the sex of the mice. I find that a little bit
troubling. Yeah.
The other thing that I found troubling, that if we were journal clubbing this kind of stuff, a couple sentences more downs, it says, investigators were not blinded. What does that mean?
A lot of bias could come into it then.
Why? Yeah. What does blinding mean in terms of science? And why is blinding important in thinking about science in general?
I gotcha. I mean, the idea is that you typically don't know which is the control and which is the normal group, right? So, you try to see.
Correct. So the gold standard in science is placebo-controlled double-blinded things, which means the subjects and the experimenters and the people doing the data analysis, like triple-blind, don't know the treatment groups that the animals or people were in until after the experiment's over and it's decoded.
Gotcha.
In this case, whoever was doing the experiments were not blinded.
Oh, just knew?
They knew which animals were the feast. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. probably because the graduate students were changing the diets and doing all these sort of things. And there's a whole literature about expectation bias. There's a whole literature on sometimes called the Pygmalion effect, is if people expect to get something sometimes, and I'm not saying it happened, right? Especially you start doing these, you know, flow cytometry, cell culture assays, you're looking at gene expression of these cells. Maybe it didn't matter.
Sure.
If they knew if they were collecting blood or something from a feast mouse or a non-feast mouse. Maybe it didn't matter.
It's definitely another question mark.
Maybe it did.
For sure, yeah.
Maybe it did. So in terms of experimental design, if I was the PI in this lab, I'd want to know about potential sex differences, and I would want my students or people working in the lab to do this blind, where you might have one person collecting the samples, and then you give it to somebody, and they don't know what treatment group they came from.
Sure.
I think it would improve the integrity of the experiments. Now, I'm not saying the results aren't true or wrong or anything like that. I'm just saying if you're going to journal club it and you'll be critical, these are key things. Unfortunately, Josh, we are running out of time. This is 107.7 The Bronx and 107.7thebronx.com. We're recording Health 411 from the Digital Bronx Studios. This program is part of Capital Health and Rider University's efforts to bring people together to address issues associated with all aspects of health and healthcare. We hope today's conversation about feast diets, short-term feast diets, and changes in mucosal immunity through the IL-17 system has given you some things to think about. If you have questions and or comments about this program, or want to make suggestions for future broadcasts, please email us at health411@rider.edu.
Remember, you have a doctor's appointment scheduled for every Sunday at 10 a.m. Don't miss the all-new Health 411 with Dr. Jonathan Karp and our expert medical guest from Capital Health. You can listen to Health 411 anytime on demand. Go to 1077thebronx.com/health411 to listen to past episodes, or tune in every Thursday at 9 a.m. to hear the weekend rewind edition of Health 411. Health 411 on 1077 The Bronx is underwritten by Capital Health, Minds Advancing Medicine. Capital Health is the region's leader in providing progressive quality patient care with exceptional physicians, nurses, and staff, as well as advanced technology.